Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, May 30th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The sole survivor of a Coast Guard helicopter crash has been denied promotion, possibly ending his military career. Lieutenant Lance Leone was one of four people aboard an Air Station Sitka helicopter when it crashed off the coast of Washington State in 2010. Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano signed an order last week removing him from the list of officers scheduled for promotion. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
In August, Leone was passed over for promotion to lieutenant commander. He appealed, and the case made its way up to Napolitano's desk. As the U.S. Secretary of Homeland Security, she oversees the Coast Guard. Napolitano issued her decision May 23rd, upholding a November ruling on the case.
The military is what is affectionately known as an up-or-out system.
John Smith is Leone's civilian attorney.
If you don't get promoted, you will not be able to stay in the service in whatever capacity in most instances.
So the denial of his promotion could signal the beginning of the end for Leone's career. That's not to say the door is closed on him yet. He's up for another regularly scheduled promotion review in August, and Smith says they could also ask the Coast Guard board that handles military records to remove the negative reports from Leone's official file.
It's possible that he could get promoted. He's gotten two more officer evaluation reports since he was taken off the list, both of which are stellar. So there's a chance, but not much of one.
Leone was co-pilot of an H-60 helicopter en route from Astoria, Oregon to Sitka when it crashed. The Hilo was flying fast and low and off of its flight plan when it clipped some Coast Guard wires between the mainland and James Island and went into the water below. Three of the four people aboard died, and in late 2011, the Coast Guard filed charges against Leone. Those charges were ultimately dismissed, but the Coast Guard officially reprimanded Leone. They said he contributed to the accident by failing to question the pilot's sudden change of course. Leone and his team maintain there was nothing he could have done to prevent the accident and that he was operating within the normal bounds of his training. They blame the Coast Guard for not removing the wires across the channel, which were no longer in use and had been the source of accidents in the past.
I get so close to accomplishing the next goal, and then it just is pulled away.
That is Lance Leone. He has not flown since the accident and is now working a Coast Guard desk job in San Antonio, Texas. He says he plans to continue fighting for a promotion.
I was surprised, but I'm not totally disheartened by the fact that it happened. I believe everything happens for a reason, and I think I have to continue this path and follow through and make sure that the right thing does eventually happen.
Smith, the attorney, has stronger words about Leone's non-promotion.
This action is vindictive, nothing short of vindictive. I think that the Coast Guard leadership chose Lieutenant Leone as a scapegoat.
The Coast Guard says its actions are about standards, not scapegoats. Carlos Diaz is a spokesman for the Coast Guard based at headquarters in Washington, D.C.
This is an unfortunate situation. Nobody really wins, but again, the Coast Guard needs to be consistent with the review process and the way they keep their standards.
Diaz cited the Coast Guard's final report on the 2010 accident, the document that said Leone was partly at fault for the crash. He said the results of that report require the Coast Guard to take action.
People expect us to have high standards, especially in the aviation community, where you know it is a really unforgiving business. And unfortunately, in this case, we have seen what can happen, how dangerous can be.
Leone, meanwhile, says he's still hoping to advance to lieutenant commander, but that he's also starting to consider his options after the Coast Guard. If he's passed over again in August, Smith says Leone will have about a year left. And he says whatever happens, he believes his client will be okay.
Lieutenant Leone is going to succeed at whatever he does. He just hopes, and I hope for him, that it will be in the Coast Guard.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
Sea Alaska has sold its international shipping management business. Officials say it's part of a change in corporate direction. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
See, Alaska recently sold its global logistics business to 20Cubed, a much larger firm with offices in about 10 countries. The subsidiary managed international shipping, warehousing, and related services, as does its new owner.
We didn't believe that that particular type of logistics would be able to grow to the size of company that we expect.
Chris McNeil is Sea Alaska's president and CEO. He says the Southeast-based regional native corporation is re-engineering its portfolio and narrowing its variety of companies. That includes those accessing a controversial federal contract preference provision.
Some of the smaller companies were set up to take advantage of the Section 8A opportunities. And where the 8A opportunities have existed and been strong, like we've expanded our platform, but where we think that perhaps it will not be able to meet our goals and we're moving in another direction.
While Sea Alaska's shed one subsidiary, it's looking for another. McNeil says the board and management are discussing an investment closer to home.
We're expecting that we would move forward with an operation that would more strongly reflect our native values, more particularly capacity building and leadership, the possibility of competitive advantage in the sector. We're very interested in the impact of an operation could have on our tribal member shareholders in the region, as well as possibly the Pacific Northwest.
He won't name the company or its line of business, but he says this and other changes could reduce revenues in the short term.
We're doing it from a position of strength because we have a very strong balance sheet that will support us to be able to move forward in this direction.
The ultimate goal is to be profitable within 3 years without depending on 7I payments. Those come from a pool of all regional native corporations' resource earnings. Sea Alaska's business decisions and leadership are roundly criticized by some of its 21,000 shareholders. Mick Beasley is one of 10 independent candidates challenging 4 incumbents for seats on the board of directors. He's among those frustrated with the corporation.
So we sacrificed how many years for the last direction? Same leaders, different story now. I kind of think we're still waiting for our stimulus.
Beasley has authored resolutions calling for board term limits and an end to board-directed discretionary voting. He's also run for the board before. He says he's frustrated Sea Alaska hasn't moved faster on minerals development and other resource extraction operations.
Let's just get new people in there. Let's get some rotation. Let's get some change. It's almost like if you just look at our operations, it's like we could have anybody in there. If we didn't have 7I right now, we would be in a world of hurt.
Sea Alaska's annual report for 2012 shows it made almost $312 million in gross revenues. That's a 20% increase over 2011. Net revenues or profits were $11.3 million during the same period. That's 40% more than the previous year, but less than during 2009 and 2010. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The U.S. Forest Service says states like Alaska that participate in the Secure Rural Schools program owe the federal government money. Local governments throughout the state use the money to pay for schools and all sorts of rural development projects. Officials with the Forest Service say budget cuts are forcing them to ask for the payments back. As APRN's Peter Granitz reports, it's predictably causing a congressional backlash.
Congress created the Secure Rural Schools program in 2000 to help regions stung by the slowdown in logging. It gives money to some 700 communities across the country, from Puerto Rico to Southeast Alaska. It's especially important there, where the commercial timber industry has all but idled since the 1990s.
They didn't do anything wrong. Those communities just are located in a national forest.
Bruce Hunter is the Associate Executive Director of the School Superintendents Association. He says communities located on federal land took it on the chin when the government ended large-scale logging during the Clinton years.
Timber harvest had resulted in monies to the counties, royalty monies to the counties.
And without that money, local governments can't pay for schools. To be clear, it's not just education that gets money. Local governments divvy it up between schools and infrastructure projects, roads, bridges, anything that would normally be paid for with tax dollars. Beth Pendleton is the regional forester for Alaska. She says the village of Cake used about $85,000 to reconstruct a 0.8-mile trail on the Hamilton Creek estuary, a trail she says gets used for both subsistence and sport fishing and hunting.
The contract for that work went to a small firm in Ketchikan, so it provided for some local jobs and also provided the use of locally milled Alaska yellow cedar for the boardwalk trail surfacing project.
Local communities have come to rely on the money because they can't tax federal land. So it took more than a few by surprise when Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell fired off a letter to governors saying he needs the money back. In January, the Forest Service began giving out the payments. Oregon Democrat Ron Wyden chairs the Senate Natural Resources Committee. He asked Tidwell what happens if the governors choose not to return the money.
A lot of these communities just have no room, just no flexibility. What will happen then?
Well, I'm not the expert here, but it's my understanding that if the funds aren't returned the day that they're due, that there will be penalties, there's interest payments that will occur.
Did you catch that last line? The federal government plans on charging interest on money it gave the states. Senator Lisa Murkowski calls the move adding insult to injury.
The revenues that we've given you, that you anticipated, that you budgeted for, we're going to claw that back. And if you can't return that money, then we're going to ding you with penalties and fines that they further can't pay. For heaven's sakes, we have got to figure out a better path forward than that.
Many worry rural governments will see less and less over the next 9 years because the Budget Control Act, the legislation creating sequester, lasts for a decade. And those same people worry whether the Secure Rural Schools program will get reauthorized this year. There's no movement on that just yet. In Washington, D.C., I'm Peter Granitz.
And that's all for Raven News. You are listening to KCAW in Sitka.